So, Steve, last week you had a story about the three sisters that are traditionally part of many Native American gardens.
Yeah, that's right. Corn, beans, and squash. They're grown together for their mutual benefit and can make for a variety of tasty stews.
Yeah, I have to try some. But, you know, I recently learned that there are actually seven sisters in some Native food cultures. And you know me, I'm a pretty big gardener. So I wanted to learn more, and I called up Amy Rose Fole. She is Penobscot Abenaki and founder of the Virginia Free Farm in Virginia. Their mission is to provide free Native seeds to gardeners and training for how to grow them. Hi there, Amy Rose.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So some of our listeners may be familiar with the Native American tradition of the three sisters, that is, planting corn, beans, and squash in the same plot of land to mutually benefit each of the plants. But you say that there are actually seven sisters in some Native food traditions. What are they?
Yeah, so we're so different across the continent. I mean, there's 600 different tribes. And so we have a base of seven sisters, Skamon, which is corn, Adabakwal, which is beans, Wawasawa, which is squash, Gizos Kozan, which is sunflower, Jerusalem artichokes, which actually don't even have a word. We call them Ojibwa potatoes. You know, the Ojibwa are far west, the Anishinaabe, they're west on the other side of the Mohawk. And sister ground cherry, which is Kia Divimin, and Odamu, or Wodam, which is tobacco.
Our listeners are probably familiar with some of those, you know, like sunflowers and corn and beans, but maybe haven't heard of ground cherries. They're sort of like a tomatillo, a little fruit inside of a papery husk. I think they taste like a cross between a tomato and a pineapple, but in the most delicious way you could imagine. Can you tell our listeners more about those?
Yes, they do have this kind of amorphous taste. I don't know. Some people describe it as tomato crust with strawberry. Some people describe it just as you said, tomato crust with a pineapple. I love them. They're so good. You can use them pretty adaptively for both sweet and savory applications in cooking. They're so good. They're really great to add to hot sauce.
Well, you know, most of our listeners are going to be familiar with corn, of course. We think of sweet corn that we get in the summertime, corn on the cob. But there are actually thousands of varieties, from what I understand. Can you please tell us about one or two of your favorites? And why is corn so important in your Native culture?
So corn, it's so adaptable. There's so many different kinds. So we have Calais and Tom Thumb, and we've got Gasp. And then there's other corns that are quick maturing as well. When you think of like Pima White, it's adapted specifically to not really need to be watered. And then the rest of the country have larger ears, sometimes different colors, different sugar contents for particular things. You can make parched corn, which I think your listeners probably would be more familiar with corn nuts that you can get at every convenience store across the country. They're actually a traditional Native food and they're parched for longevity. But then there is all sorts of different corns that you can make flour out of, popcorns, and they were basically specifically engineered naturally by farming mothers of the past, many generations back, and they're kind of like a little gift to us today, especially that some of these varieties are very scarce.
It's really a reminder to me of just how much diversity, how much richness there is in food and how much we've lost by not, you know, growing these things and having access to them and, you know, by proxy, maybe losing a bit of our culture.
Yeah. And it's sad because when you think about Native foods, really, what do you think of besides corn? Probably not much. And it's surprising to really think about because 75% of the food that's in an average American's diet on a day-to-day basis are actually new world cultivars or crops. I mean, green beans that everyone has for Thanksgiving, they are a Native cultivar. There was no green beans. Lima beans, they are native to the new world.
Now, why do you suppose it's called the seven sisters and not the seven brothers or the seven cousins? Why do these plants have a femininity associated with them?
Well, there's actually two answers to that question. So they do take care of you. In the springtime, there's a saying, the earth is pregnant, so we must tread lightly. Mm-hmm. And then as it progresses into summer and things are more vigorous, the garden matures, and then in the fall, when the garden is ready to be harvested, it's like a grandmother that cares for you and nourishes you and provides everything you need from the seeds for next year to the sustenance that your body needs in the present time and in the moment. And also, farming was traditionally done by women. The women were in charge of making sure that all of the food was grown properly, harvested, and distributed throughout the families.
Now, a big part of your work is to advocate for saving seeds as a way to preserve native cultures. Can you tell us more about that, please? What is that relationship?
So seed is power when you think about it and distill it to the most basic idea. If you control your food source, you're a lot harder to manipulate and influence when you're healthy and well-fed and your mind is clear. And, you know, food was actually used as a means of extermination and a weapon of war against my ancestors. And it was fairly effective, but food was used as a manipulator and a means by which to control people. So when I advocate for seed sovereignty and food sovereignty, not just for Native people, but for all people in my community. Because if we work together and we have a method to control our food source, because nobody can argue with the fact that a lot of the American offerings of food are not healthy that we have on a regular basis. And that might be purposeful. The food system is built the way it is for a reason. But if you can provide your own food and take care of yourself, you are less controllable. You're sovereign. You can feed yourself. You don't need anyone else to provide it for you. And that's important.
And if we don't keep these native seeds, these rare seeds, and grow them out as plants, how real is the possibility that some of these varieties could actually go extinct?
Very real. Last year, I believe I was one of only two growers in North America for Abenaki rose corn. And this year, I think I was the only U.S. grower of Penobscot pumpkins. A lot of these are so scarce that even if you Google them, you'll be hard-pressed to find much information on them. One of the ones that I grew this year was Winnebago corn. It's Winnebago spotted corn. And it's so scarce, even the tiny boutique seed companies don't offer that in their catalogs.
You know, the country seems so divided right now in so many different ways. But, you know, Thanksgiving and this season of the harvest always feels like a time that people can come together. Everybody can agree on food, right? Everybody can agree what's good, what tastes good, you know. How do you see these native seeds and native plants as a potential way of unifying people, if at all?
Yeah, food culture is the great unifier. It bridges cultural gaps, I guess you could say. I mean, okay, so when I think of culture, I always think of food. I think of Italian food or Thai food or Ethiopian food. And I think food can be a great unifier, especially when you're trying something new. I mean, when you're sitting around your Thanksgiving table, you're basically eating the continent, the green bean casserole, the turkey, the potatoes, the pumpkin pie. And it's funny because not a lot of that is seen as native food anymore. It's just kind of generic American food. And when you think about Thanksgiving in particular, it was a manufactured holiday after the Civil War to bring two sides of a divided country together. So I think that there's a lesson to be learned from that, you know? And if we can just set our differences aside and sit down around a good meal and enjoy it and savor it, there's huge power in sharing food with someone. I mean, the first thing I do whenever anybody comes over, especially if they're a new guest or I haven't met them before, or they're brought by a friend of mine over, is try to feed them. Maybe I'm turning into my grandmother, but I think that's great. It disarms you. It makes you feel welcome and comfortable. I think that that's a beautiful thing.
I do too. I think, you know, the way to anyone's heart really can be through food. Amy Rose Full is founder of the Virginia Free Farm in Kent Store, Virginia. Amy Rose, thank you so much for sharing these stories about food with us today.
Well, Lini, thank you for having me.